Fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. President Obama said he got shellacked as a tide of red spread from the East Coast to the West Coast, turning the U.S. Congress Republican, cutting the Democrats' margin in the Senate. And here in Wisconsin, defeating three-term Senator Russ Feingold, putting Republican Sean Duffy in the congressional seat that Dave Obie has held for 41 years, and giving Governor-elect Scott Walker big Republican margins in both the state Senate and the state Assembly. Among the Democratic casualties, Senate Majority Leader Russ Decker of Wausau, defeated by physician and political newcomer Pam Galloway, and Assemblyman Marlon Schneider of Wisconsin Rapids, who has held his seat for 40 years. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today we analyze the midterm elections with our guests, Republican Party analyst Kevin Hermaning, Democratic Party analyst Chris Bremer, and Rob Mentzer, the opinion page editor of the Wausau Daily Herald, who helped plan and moderate the U.S. Senate and 7th District congressional debates that we held here over the past month at UW-Marathon County. Well, I imagine you've got opinions, comments, and questions about what happened Tuesday and what it means for the next 2 years in Washington and here in North Central Wisconsin. So give us a call, and we will put your opinions on the air toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. So, Kevin, you must be feeling pretty good today.
Well, I think that there was a lot of anticipation that this might happen anyway over the last couple of months. It looked like all of the polls were indicating a sea of red was going to wash the state as well as most of the nation with Republican incumbents being reelected and a lot of people being turned out of office, particularly career politicians.
And Chris, you must be feeling pretty blue today.
I always feel blue. I'm a Democrat. But I guess I feel like I agree with Kevin. It was something that we were looking forward to and kind of dreading. But on the same token, we always have to look forward, Glenn. We always have to look forward.
And Rob Mentzer, from your editorial position at the Wausau Daily Herald, what does all this mean?
Well, I mean, Glenn, I think that really Democrats should be grateful that they kind of dodged a bullet. I read, I'm not sure if this is right, but I think that if Republicans had gained 70 seats in the House, then Barack Obama automatically would have had to resign, and John Boehner would have become president. So really, Democrats should look on the bright side.
I didn't see that in my Constitution.
I may not have that quite right.
But I know that there are varying interpretations.
Yeah, I don't know where he went to law school. It's not in Wisconsin.
Well, every time I turn around, somebody's got a different idea of what's in the Constitution or what isn't.
So.
Though John Boehner is, of course, now second in line.
That's a frightening thought, isn't it?
Third in line. Oh, second in line after Joe Biden. Yeah. Yes,
first
he is.
In line would be the vice president, a scary thought indeed, and therefore second in line would be.
No, you've got that wrong, Kevin.
Well, Kevin, what do you think all this means?
Well, I think that the voting public, and that, of course, doesn't necessarily mean the entire American populace, really likes the idea of a checks and balance approach to how government operates. They do not particularly care for either extreme, and they don't like one-party control of of all three of the major institutions, at least from a legislative and an executive branch perspective in Washington, as well as Madison. I mean, look at all of the changes that happened in Madison. Of course, I think we'll probably spend at least half the time today talking about the federal field now, but
I think what we're going to do
next time's even worse for the Democrats.
We're going to take the first half hour and talk about the national results and the national candidates in Wisconsin. Then we'll take the second half hour and talk about the state of Wisconsin. But Chris Bremer, Kevin is talking about divided government. Well, if you look back through history, the only time significant change really happens in this country is when you have one political party in charge of the White House and the Senate and the Congress.
I think that's absolutely right, Glenn. And if we look back in history, there was certainly a shellacking, as President Obama said, of our President Roosevelt after Social Security was passed, because change doesn't come easy. And until people are certain that change is really for the better, there's going to be some backlash. And so just as in 1934, there is now some people that are going to be saying that we have to be looking at what this vote for health care really was all about, and they're not going to go along with it. And so we have to now see what's really going to happen with health care.
Well, I was going to bring this up later in the conversation, but I'll bring it up now since you mentioned it. Mm-hmm. I had a chance to talk to Dave Obey on this show about 5 months ago, and he mentioned that he patterned his congressional career after a guy named Jerry Boileau, who was the progressive congressman who represented the 7th Congressional District during the New Deal in the 30s. He lost the election in 1938 during a sweeping Republican tide, which was caused, according to Mr. Obey, by the passage of Social Security. And there was a reaction against it, just like there's a reaction against health care today. So I guess if you're a Democrat, you have to hope that eventually this health care bill that was passed becomes as popular as Social Security eventually became. But, that's up for grabs, and that may be a tall order.
Well, I think that you're right. I misspoke when I said 1934. It was 1938. And I've heard Dave Obey talk about that very thing. And that's correct. You know, it is going to be a tall order for the Congress to show that, and the Democrats to show that this health care bill really is going to do the things that it's promised to do.
Well, let's start right now by looking at the man who just won Dave Obey's seat, Sean Duffy. I'm going to play a clip, a portion of his victory speech at the Rose Garden on Tuesday night.
But the bailouts and the takeovers was expanding government, and it was, I think, threatening the role that our traditional government has had in our lives, and it was threatening to give us a European-style cradle-to-grave socialist state, which I thought was unacceptable. I thought we got to get involved. And you know, as we just take a look at our great American history, you know, I think that every generation has a calling and a purpose. And you look back to the greatest generation, and they fought World War II. They defeated tyranny on the global stage. I look at our generation, and I think our great battle is fighting the advancement of this creeping socialism.
That's Sean Duffy Tuesday night during his election speech. Kevin Hermaning, your reaction to that. Is that the central challenge and the central battle of this new generation, defeating creeping socialism?
Well, from a philosophical standpoint, I think that Sean is right. I was there at the victory speech, the victory party at the Rose Garden here in Wausau. I think that Sean Duffy and most of those who were elected into the freshman class of 2011 into the United States House of Representatives, as well as those in the Senate, like Ron Johnson, our senator-elect in Wisconsin, they are there to roll back the huge spending increases of the last 2 years. That's their mandate, they believe. I happen to agree with it. There are already proposals that are being drafted up in Washington, being put forth by folks like John Boehner and Eric Cantor and Paul Ryan to roll back the spending to the 2008 levels, rather than the expanded budgetary increases that happened over the last couple of years. It's not as though anybody is going to be able to go into Washington and undo Obamacare over the next 2 years. They can certainly not fund certain elements of it, but it's really to not fund some of the programs with which Republicans don't agree, and it is to try to get a handle on the increased and runaway budget deficits that we have seen run up in huge percentages over the last couple of years.
What happens if there's an effort to defund some of these programs, Chris Bremer?
Well, I just have to say something about that speech, if you'll let me. It's kind of shocking to hear someone like Sean Duffy talk about creeping socialism when this is a man who really wears his religion on his sleeve. I think we all know that he's got 6 kids and he's very active in the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church, the whole background for the Catholic Church as a fellow Catholic, I can say, is the issue of social justice. Now, is creeping socialism not funding Badger Care? Is creeping socialism not funding programs for people that are in need? I mean, it's kind of shocking to me because we never heard anything about creeping socialism when he was in his campaign. And I think people that voted for him weren't thinking about social issues. They were thinking about cuts to deficits. And I think Kevin's right that that's what people were thinking about, jobs and budgets. So this is kind of a shocking comment from someone on his first venture as our new prospective congressperson.
Rob Mentzer, your newspaper endorsed Sean Duffy. You write the editorials. Tell us why you made the endorsement.
Well, I mean, our endorsement, you know, Sean Duffy was in our view, was by far the more energetic candidate and the more, he had qualities to his candidacy that appealed to us. Certainly his view on the deficit is widely shared by a lot of conservatives. I think, on this socialism thing, we're adults. I think you got to admit that, in today's political discourse, socialism just sort of means something I don't like that's kind of identified with the left.
Spending issues.
Yeah,
well,
you guys.
It's more financial than it is social.
You certainly don't see a lot of. There are some sort of hardcore libertarians, but even like a Rand Paul or somebody who's quite identified with the libertarian right isn't actually talking about really getting rid of whatever social spending it might be.
I think that kind of attitude, talking about it's okay to talk about creeping socialism, is very dangerous, and I think that especially in hard economic times, when we can look back at Germany and Berlin in 1938 and say, what was the rise of fascism? And, it was because people were afraid, bad economic times, the scissor had opened so that the poor people had nothing and the rich had a lot. And when we all, people like you, Rob, or intellectuals or people that are commenting on our society start saying it's okay to say that funding programs for the poor is creeping socialism, I think that's extremely dangerous, and I think that that's absolutely wrong.
Well, it's just not clear what it's referring to in any point. Maybe Kevin can help us to understand, but it's not. It just seems to me like kind of a. It's just a name that people say. It's not clear to me what the program that is affiliated with.
Excuse me, but isn't that something as you, as a member of the editorial board, should sort out before you give
an endorsement thing to say?
I don't think it's silly, and you didn't point that out to your readers.
But Senator Lassa,
he hadn't heard that. He hadn't heard that from Mr. Duffy.
That's just my point.
He should have maybe found that out before the endorsement.
Glenn and Chris, I think that's patently false. I met with Sean Duffy before he even announced his candidacy for the House of Representatives over a year and a half ago, and I have been to numerous events with our congressman-elect. I have heard him talk at many occasions, including about 2 weeks ago when he received the endorsement in Wausau of the National Federation of Independent Businesses, and he used the phrase creeping socialism. And I think what he meant by that was that it is not government's responsibility to provide cradle-to-grave support for every social ill that exists. At a certain point, we have to reignite and reinforce and have government policies that support the private sector and the growth of our wealth creators in our society who can then turn around and pay the taxes that build the engine of our government, but also can be givers in a social justice, if you want to use that phrase, but a social support network that is separate from government.
One of the issues in that race was the issue of outsourcing jobs, which is something that Senator Lassa really hitched her campaign to. And the entire idea of job creation in what has been called a global economy is the central argument here. I'm going to play a clip from the Julie Lassa, Sean Duffy debate about outsourcing, and then we'll see what your reactions are to it.
Well, I believe that, outsourcing is what is helping to kill the middle class and our workers in this country. I don't believe that we should continue the failed policies out in Washington, D.C. that give tax breaks to corporations who move American jobs overseas. I mean, people here in this country, in this state, in order to buy the products that those companies are manufacturing, they need to have a good job that pays them a decent wage so that they can actually afford to buy those products. That's why I believe we need to close those tax loopholes to make sure that corporations aren't moving our good-paying jobs overseas and that it's not being facilitated by the federal government.
Mr. Duffy, you have 90 seconds.
Sure. Senator Lassa likes to talk about failed policies in Washington, D.C. The last time I checked, the Democrats were in charge of everything in Washington, D.C., from the presidency, the House, and the Senate. And it's her party's policies and the policies that she supports that are killing jobs across this country. Senator Alassa voted to increase taxes and fees last year by $5 billion. And the bottom line is when we go into the budget process next year, Wisconsin has a nearly $3 billion budget deficit. And when you look at what these policies have done to jobs in Wisconsin, there's a lot of jobs in Wisconsin that are being exported to other states because the policies that Senator Alassa has advocated for have made it more difficult for those companies to compete here in Wisconsin.
Well, I'll just make a stylistic observation there. There you see Sean Duffy's skill as a debater. Julie Lassa campaigned against Washington and against the outsourcing of manufacturing jobs, and here Duffy deftly turns it around by calling her the government insider and by arguing that her policies in the state Senate actually caused manufacturing jobs to leave Wisconsin.
Well, for crying out loud, Glenn, she is the chairperson of the Senate's Economic Committee. She clearly is an insider, but her comments also clearly indicate to anybody who knows anything about the legislative process and federal law and the tax code, corporations do not get tax breaks for sending jobs overseas. There's no such thing as a tax break for doing that. Well, our government has no ability to tax a foreign operation of any corporation, U.S.-based or international, nor should they.
I think what this talks to, this little excerpt, and I think it's a great excerpt to pull out, Glenn, is how misleading this debate became. Because when we started talking about this $5 billion tax increase, what in fact we're talking about is, I think it is because it's been a little vague, but I believe that what he's referring to is the combined reporting issue and also the hospital tax. Now, combined reporting was simply a way for the legislature to try to bring back the revenues back to Wisconsin from businesses that were making money in Wisconsin and then forming, you know, shell corporations in other states where the tax rates were lower. And by bringing that money back to Wisconsin, that would have raised over $288 million in revenue for our state. I think that's a good thing.
Well, we're going to be talking about all of these state issues in the next half hour, but my only observation, Kevin, was that he is a skilled debater.
What that really tells me is that, first of all, I agree with you. He is a skilled debater. After all, let's face it, he was a district attorney for many years. He's been in the courtroom challenging his opponents in court. He is an attorney. He's well skilled at that. Christine is well skilled in that role as well. I think that's terrific. I guess what it really tells me, he obviously is better prepared to stand up against the likes of other congressmen in Washington
Rob,
than Julie Lassa would have
Rob,
been.
Let's get your reaction to the clip. You were sitting on that panel with me there.
Yeah, I mean, it is a skillful debating move, and it's fair game. She is chairwoman of the Economic Development Committee, but it's also a case. I'm sort of an economic determinist when it comes to elections, and I just think, look, we're in a recession. It's not Julie Lassa's fault that there's a global recession that caused a bunch of jobs to be lost. But yet, you know, if you're running against Julie Lassa, you point out she's on the Economic Development Committee. Where's the economic development? But you know, it really does come down to how the larger macro economy is doing. I really think that's how people vote.
We're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Rob Mentzer of the Daily Herald, Chris Bremer, our Democratic analyst, and Kevin Hermaning, our Republican analyst. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg, 1-800-780-9742, if you want to join the conversation.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
We're talking about the midterm elections with Republican Kevin Hermaning, Democrat Chris Bremer, and Wausau Daily Herald opinion page editor Rob Mentzer. And we are coming to the close of our first half hour, so I want to play this clip right away. This is a cut from the other debate that Rob and I helped plan and helped moderate, the debate between Russ Feingold and Ron Johnson. Rob, this is the response to your question about Ron Johnson's favorite piece of literature, the book Atlas Shrugged.
Very popular question.
By libertarian philosopher Ayn Rand.
Atlas Shrugged.
Alice represents the producers of America, of the country. Shrug means they have become so overburdened with regulations and rules and taxes. At some point, they shrug, they quit. And what the book talks about in a fictionalized manner is what happens to society when the producers of the society quit. It's a warning what could happen to America. And when you hear people talking about a tipping point, that's what we're concerned about.
And I give you credit for being consistent with Atlas Shrugged. You believe the producers are a very special group of people. I guess they're better than the rest of us. You support trade agreements that ship tens of thousands of jobs overseas, and you say, well, I'm a producer, so that's good because it's creative destruction. It'll all work out in the end. Well, it might work out in the end for you and other people who are very well-to-do and fortunate. What about all the other people in the community who are suffering?
Well, that question certainly crystallized the philosophical differences between those two men. Rob, why did you ask the question?
Well, I mean, you know, some people say, well, you asked a question about a book Ron Johnson once read, but it's not that. He's called it it's a foundational book for him, and it's a book that espouses a certain a fairly extreme view of how the economy ought to be. And in fact, actually, that you know, you can hear from those two responses. That is as clear a distinction as you can get between those two candidates. So, I mean, I think that there's something to it. The idea that this book does actually in some real ways shape the way that Ron Johnson sees the world.
Well, Ayn Rand is a controversial figure. She believed selfishness was a virtue, and I don't think it's fair to tie Ron Johnson to everything she believed. She also was an atheist who attacked traditional Christian values like altruism and helping the poor, arguing that the rich have no moral obligation to share their wealth with anybody else. But nonetheless, Ron Johnson does not step back from his admiration for that particular piece of literature, which is really steeped in Ayn Rand's philosophy. I'd like Kevin and Chris to give me 30-second reactions, because that's all we've got right now. We'll start with you, Kevin.
Well, of course, you would expect me to say I completely agree with what Ron Johnson had to say. I think when you're talking about that the rich have no moral obligation to step up to the plate and help those less fortunate, I think people would say that there shouldn't be a government-imposed requirement to step up.
And Chris Bremer, very quickly.
Well, I guess that shows you how different we are. I believe there should be a government-imposed requirement that we all step up, and I'm happy to be part of it.
We've got to hold it there. We'll be back with more of Route 51 midterm election analysis after this. We are back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We are talking about the midterm election results and the Republican sweep all across the nation, and particularly here in the state of Wisconsin. My guests today, Chris Bremer, Democratic analyst, also Kevin Hermaning, Republican analyst, and also Rob Mentzer, the opinion page editor of the Wausau Daily Herald. I'm Glenn Moberg. We are looking for your questions and comments and your contributions to the show at 1-800-780-9742. And where we left off before we took our break was a discussion about the U.S. Senate race between Russ Feingold, three-term incumbent, who lost to manufacturer and political novice Ron Johnson. Let's go to the phones right now and take a call on that very subject from Ann in Stevens Point. Ann, you're on Route 51.
Hi there. I don't really think that it was a complete rejection of Obama's policies. I think it was jobs, the economy, period. Now, in my opinion, I think Russ Feingold is one of the most amazing and ethical members of the United States Senate. And we needed 99 more with his integrity, intelligence, independence, and work ethic. And now, sadly, many misinformed, frustrated, scared citizens of Wisconsin have fallen for the negative corporate-funded fear and smear tactics and turned him away for someone who I think is ill-prepared. He's a rich corporate pawn, and his goal is to repeal health care reform and obliterate Social Security. His words, continue tax break for his rich friends, including himself, and calls human-caused global climate change a hoax. I personally really appreciated Russ's listening sessions, and I don't expect to ever see Ron Johnson here in my county.
All right, Ann, hang on just a second. We're going to let Kevin Hermaning respond to you.
Well, for I thought the campaign ended on Monday night. I thought I was just listening to another negative campaign commercial coming out of Washington. Russ Feingold was never a true independent. Russ Feingold was one of the most liberal senators in Washington, D.C. He voted for the party line on almost every major piece of legislation. Two or three legislative dodges over the last 6 or 18 years doesn't make somebody an independent or a
maverick. That is absolutely incorrect, sir. You do not know this man's record. That is just your party line. It is not true at all, and I suggest you should have looked at his record before you and your corporate and Republican right-wingers vilified this man and tried to say he was things he was not. People were scared by all the garbage that came into their mailboxes, and they fell for it.
All right, Ann, thanks for the phone call. Chris Bremer, do you have anything to add to this?
Well, how could you say it better than Ann? I think, Ann, you're great. You should come and sit in my chair and help me.
Let's talk about the central issue that she seemed to be bringing up here, which is the amount of money that got poured into the campaigns, many of it from outside sources, and the kind of literature and the negative TV ads. Now, we complain about this every time there's an election, but it seems to be worse this time around than it has been in recent memory.
Well, I think, Glenn, with the decision of the United States Supreme Court in the Citizens United case, which has now opened up the floodgates to corporate giving, calling a corporation the same as an individual and having the same constitutional rights as an individual to fund campaigns, is really going to change our country in a very negative way. I mean, now, if you want to talk about what's the impact, the impact is simply this. We know that at the end of this campaign, a group out of Arlington, Virginia, which is one of the five groups we understand are funded by the United States Chamber of Commerce and headed by Karl Rove and Gillespie, put over $300,000 in our little market against Senator Decker. And I actually saw the buys from the TV stations. And I was shocked to see a $300,000 buy. Now, I know a little bit about what it costs to go on television. And I know that $300,000 would outstrip my budget for the whole year by a lot. So in this campaign, when that kind of money can be put on a candidate, you know, it's frightening. All you have to do is say to a candidate, if you're a corporate lobbyist, look, buddy, if you don't vote the way we want you to, we're going to put $1 million against you and you will not be reelected.
Kevin?
Well, I think that really what that Supreme Court law, Supreme Court ruling did earlier this year was to level the playing field and say that individuals, labor unions, and corporations are all or should be all on the same footing when it comes to political speech, so to speak. And the campaigns certainly had individual contributions given to their candidates. But corporate interests and union interests have been a part of the political process for many, many years. This isn't anything new, and both sides had more than their fair share of benefactors.
Can I just say, I mean, it's tricky because, you know, it seems like there must be some influence, right, from outside spending. It's counterintuitive to say that there's nothing. But I did read the New York Times report this week sort of tallied up what the spending was, and they found that, you know, that sort of right-leaning groups, Republican-supportive groups, spent more for the U.S. Senate, where Republicans did not gain control, and actually left-leaning groups like labor unions and left-sympathetic groups spent more in the U.S. House, where Republicans did gain control. So there's got to be some relationship between spending on the margins can influence votes, but I don't. It's just not so simple to say X led to Y and this was a bought election.
Well, I think it's not about X led to Y, and this is just the beginning. I mean, 2012, it'll be much more organized. This decision just came down. But if you look at what Pam Galloway benefited from, the one you endorsed and who is now going to take over for my friend Russ Decker, what they gave her, $300,000 of advertising against Russ Decker.
So how many points on the polls would you attribute to that $300,000? You know, I mean, it was not a really close election in the end.
I certainly think that it had a huge effect. And I can tell you, having gone to Senator Decker's fundraisers for many years, and I'm an unabashed supporter of his, that I know that when someone comes in with $300,000 and lays it on the table, it disenfranchises all those laborers and all those people for years and years who would go to his fundraisers with their $10 and their $25 and their $50, because how does that help when it comes against $300,000? This is a tragedy for our
Senator
country.
Decker lost because he was a poor candidate. He didn't campaign hard this year. He had a very poor record in the U.S. Senate, in the state Senate, these last 4 years. The economy, as Rob mentioned earlier, is in shambles. The state budget is way out of whack, even though we have a balanced budget requirement. And Pam Galloway happened this time to be the better of the two candidates. That's why she won.
Well, I have to respond to that.
Very quickly, Chris.
Well, I think that there is absolutely... Senator Decker campaigned so hard. He did so more doors than any candidate you can imagine. And I know him, and I've worked with him in the state legislature. He is one of our hardest and most talented people.
Let's go to the phones. We have Matthew in Waupaca. Matthew, you're on Route 51.
Thank you, Glenn. Very interesting conversation. I want to take a look at the media component on your panel. One, the person's facts on outside spending is just not the case. The media is reporting that there are five key outside non-disclosed groups from the U.S. Chamber on down to the service employees. The service employees were ranked number five on that list. The other four organizations, including the U.S. Chamber, all supported Republican interests. But my main concern is your member of the panel on the media, the Wausau Herald, who gave a very short shrift answer on why they endorsed Sean Duffy. Never gave a policy answer, no programs, no specifics. Maybe he's tall, dark, and handsome to them, but this is the problem with the Fourth Estate and media, and I should know, I work in it. I've worked in it for 20, 30 years. It's not doing its job for the citizenry. Jefferson warned us of this. An ill-informed citizenry will lead to a bad decisions in the democracy, and frankly, the Wausau Daily Herald and its editorial board didn't do their homework, didn't vet candidates, they never vetted Johnson, and I think
they
whoever
didn't
this person
sir,
is on the board, you know, he ought to rethink his business because he's not fair and balanced, didn't do his job.
All right.
I have questions for Jeanette on this.
Matthew, I'm going to let Rob Mensah respond, but I'll just to correct something that you just said, they did endorse Russ Feingold. They did not endorse Ron Johnson, but it
I
is true.
That's fine, but well, nonetheless, the way he backfilled on his endorsement of Duffy.
All right, let's let him respond.
Well, first of all, Sean Duffy is very handsome. I mean, that's just, you can't argue
come
with that.
On.
No,
come on, Chris.
All right. But, But listen, no, the fact of the matter is that the fact of the matter is that Sean Duffy was the more energetic candidate in this race by a mile. His budget policies did appeal to the Wausau Daily Herald editorial board. So did, for instance, his pledge to hold listening sessions, sort of Feingold style listening sessions, in every county every year. That's the type of engagement that we, the Daily Herald editorial board, like to see. Also, you know, I think we appreciated some of the areas in which he did chart a more independent course. He's not for repealing health care reform. He's not a Ron Johnson type of Republican figure. And, we appreciated that independence.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Andy in Weston. Hello, Andy. You're on Route 51 with Kevin Hermaning, Chris Bremer, and Rob Mensah.
Hi. I was calling. I wanted to rebut the first caller who believes Feingold's loss on the smear ads against Feingold, no matter where they came from. I personally agree with her that I think Feingold was an ethical senator. I think he's an honest man. I think he's a likable character. And I think he does work hard at what he does there. But Feingold's job wasn't lost because of ads. It was lost because he voted for policies that weren't in favor with the majority of the people in Wisconsin.
All right. Andy, thanks so much for the comment. Anybody have anything to add?
I guess, Andy, thanks for your comment also. But I think that Senator Feingold got caught in this wave, and I think it's a tragedy. I think he was one of the finest senators we've got, and I had to agree with what Ann said before. And it's interesting that when we talk about Senator Feingold and his record, it was hard for me to understand why people who valued independence would not have supported him. And when we look at the demographic on the exit poll numbers of the people that voted against him, people seem to me to be voting against their economic interests when they voted for Ron Johnson. And it's hard for me to understand why that happened.
Could it be the health care vote?
I wanted to leave that out there. You know, a couple of his votes I might have been able to tolerate, but the health care it is widely unpopular with me personally. And if I recall correctly, somewhere around 56-58% of the people polled in Wisconsin said the same thing. It's that, it's the stimulus was wildly unpopular, and I think those things are what got them out.
I think that the problem, Andy, is that people really haven't, you know, I'd like to know from you what it exactly is about the health care bill that you don't like, because, you know, in my work, I sit and listen to people that don't have health care, and they're certainly in favor of it. So I think the problem was that the health care bill was demonized, and people really didn't understand what we're going to have
all right.
coming.
Chris, we don't have time to hash out all the ins
on,
and outs
Glenn.
Of the health care bill. That's an hour-long show. Andy, thanks so much for the phone call. We've got to take a break because I do want to talk about the state races, and we're down to 12 minutes of the show. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about Scott Walker and Pam Galloway.
The businesses, professionals, and organizations that support Wisconsin Public Radio's programming play an important part in our financial health. When you visit a WPR sponsor, please let them know that you appreciate their support of this station. Thanks very much.
We're talking about the midterm elections, and we are going to shift our focus now to state government, and I'm going to play a clip of a speech that Scott Walker, our newly elected governor, gave at a Wausau area manufacturing plant just the day before the election.
That's why we've got a plan to help the people, not the government, the people of this state create 250,000 new jobs by the end of our first term. That's a quarter of a million jobs by 2015. Now, our plan is simple but comprehensive. It's about getting government out of the way through lower taxes on small businesses and families, cutting through the red tape of regulations and easing the cost when it comes to litigation, and tackling things like health care, you know, so we have access to quality health care, but it's also affordable. You don't get that through more big government-driven mandates. You get that by getting government out of the way. And to me, one of the first things I'd love to do is go across the hall from the governor's office in the East Wing and give J.B. Van Hollen, the Attorney General, letter that says you can join the federal lawsuit that says Wisconsin gets to decide when it comes to health care, not the politicians in Washington.
Governor-elect Scott Walker, who now has an assembly that's Republican by a wide margin and a pretty comfortable margin in the state Senate. Kevin and Christine, what are your hopes and what are your fears for the next 2 years?
Well, of course, the governor-elect will be in office for 4 years, our state assembly members for two, and we'll see whether or not he can deliver on his 250,000 job pledge. I mean, if it doesn't happen by the end of his first term, it'll be kind of like Bush won in 1992, the no new tax pledge. And the state Senate and the state assembly, of course, that's where the legislation gets initiated. That is where they're going to have to really deliver when it comes to getting government out of the way and empowering the private sector. The governor clearly will sign any legislation that comes out of the legislature, either house or the two houses after conference, that helps to deliver on that pledge.
Chris,
many of us hope it works.
Chris Bremer, Scott Walker has an ambitious agenda, and there's nobody to stand in the way.
He has a mandate, actually.
Well, I think the mandate is a mandate to help create some change with regard to the economy. It certainly isn't a mandate with regard to social issues. But with regard to what he said, my goodness, you know, how can you create 250,000 new jobs, cut taxes for the wealthy, cut corporate taxes, and save programs for people that are in need all in once? I would just love to see this. And if he can do it, you know, God bless him.
You might be switching parties.
Rob
no,
Mentzer.
I promise you I won't switch parties.
Rob Mentzer, your newspaper endorsed Scott Walker. You also endorsed Pam Galloway, apparently because you didn't want Russ Decker to be the Senate Majority Leader under a Republican administration.
I think that... I think in a lot of ways Decker's record is pretty poor. There's a lot to like about Decker. I like Russ Decker. But, you know, he's not the guy who you would go to for some new ideas on how to remake Wisconsin's economy. He just isn't. He didn't lead the way on, you know, green jobs or other sorts of promising directions.
Didn't he save the Flambeau paper mill in Park Falls, which is now a biofuels-fueled facility. That's 300 green jobs that wouldn't have been there. And he had to work with a Republican, Butch Johnson, who was the CEO of that plant, in order to get it done.
He did.
How did your paper ignore that?
Glenn, it was a government bailout was what it was.
Oh, it was the right thing to do, and it was a good, and it was a good, and it was a real accomplishment by Russ Decker. But you know, that's, you gotta weigh that against the entire state economy.
Well, wait a minute. Let's weigh it against Pam Galloway. And, you know, I agree with the caller before about your responsibility as an editorial board, you know, to do the right thing. Pam Galloway was not vetted at all by your paper. All you did was say that she needs some growth. But did you tell us where she came from? Did you tell us about her extreme policies on reproductive rights? Did you tell us about any of the things that she stood for? If you go on her website, you don't have any idea what she stands for.
She stands for less government control in our daily lives. She stands for a more responsible spending plan put forth by state government.
Okay,
that's
Kevin,
what
but
she
with
stands
due
for,
respect,
Chris.
What does that stand for? What we understand about her record is she didn't want to treat people that were subject to Medicare because it was too much paperwork for her. Now, if every doctor in our country said they didn't want to take care of Medicaid and Medicare because it's too much paperwork, I guess we'd be in trouble. This is the person that was not vetted by the Daily Herald, and God
bless
her.
Well, now, wait a minute. She was twice in front of her editorial board.
I think the editorial board has an obligation.
We interviewed her two times.
And you certainly didn't give any information about those things in your editorial. People didn't understand that. And listen,
Chris,
I just want to say something. I just want to say I did my best. I would just like
but
to say something.
But obviously your best
I'm
friend, Russ Decker,
private
didn't.
Citizen. I'm just, Russ Decker tried to put forward his own positive campaign.
And it didn't work.
And he had $300,000 from Karl Rove down his back. I guess it wouldn't work for you
and
either,
Russ Decker
Kevin.
Had $250,000 of special interest money from the other side to defeat Pam Galloway, and it didn't work.
Let Rob defend himself.
Yeah, well, listen. I would say that somebody whose primary concern is to be a abortion rights activist should not vote for Pam Galloway. They would not share her views on that issue. That's I understand that. That seems legitimate to me.
But in your editorial, you said nothing about that. And if you look at that editorial page, you say that Pam Galloway has although she has no experience, let's give her a try. And in the same page, you say Todd Punkey, who has no experience, shouldn't be given a
right,
try.
Yes,
it was totally inconsistent.
That's right. Those two candidates illustrated a different level of policy understanding in our interviews.
Let's talk about something that is abortion-related, embryonic stem cell research. Will the Republicans ban it in Wisconsin, and what will that do to our economy since that entire field has been pioneered by UW-Madison?
You understand that Scott Walker's wife has multiple sclerosis, I believe, and Scott Walker is extremely sensitive to the research and the development that is necessary to try to find the solutions to a whole host of healthcare issues.
Do you think they're going to ban embryonic stem cell research? That was my question.
I think that there may be some changes coming through the legislature, and the governor's going to have to make a very difficult decision, and I think he probably will vote to not fund it at the state level.
I think that would be an absolute tragedy, not only for our nation, but for the world, and especially for our state. Wisconsin has brought the most learned people, the finest researchers in the country and in the world, here, and they are doing this work here for the benefit of all of us, and to put social agendas forward of research is just a tragedy.
But that's what you're advocating for, is your social agenda, and there happen to be people in government now who disagree with that, Chris. You're advocating for one side and saying that the other side can't have its say?
I'm advocating for research and development.
What effect do you think the Republican takeover will have on the UW system? Obviously, they've got to save a lot of money. Will we see a move by the Republicans to try to do away with the two-year schools, which was talked about 4 or 5 years ago, do away with places like UW-Marathon County, which is where we're doing this program right now? Kevin, what do you think will happen?
I think that what the Republicans in Madison are going to do is what they talked about during the election. They're going to try to rein in state spending. They're probably going to put forth some proposals for pension reform and how those state employee pensions are funded. And they're going to try to get government out of the way of the private sector so that government doesn't control how business operates, and business can then grow, hire people who become the taxpayers and the engine of our society.
Do you think they're going to try to do away with the two-year schools? Walker tried to sell UW Waukesha for a dollar when he, as Milwaukee County executive.
How can the Milwaukee County executive sell the Waukesha County UW plant facility.
That was his proposal. He was trying. He put that forward
while he was Milwaukee County executive.
Right.
Well, I'd like to. I guess I'd like to talk to that issue, because I think that when we look at Scott Walker's history and his budget proposals, it's been on the back of workers. And what I think we know from comments that have been made, that it's very likely that the UW system will have cuts that it's going to face for its salaries for its professors, also for pension benefits and health care benefits. And I think that is going to be a big change for the university. It'll be a hard change.
But no surprise to anybody.
Well, I think it's a surprise to them. These people have dedicated their lives to public education, and when they went into it, they knew that these benefit packages were available to them. And if they're cut now, it's really unfair, in my opinion. And I believe strongly, as a former president of a school board, that we have to protect these professionals.
All right, we are just about out of time. Rob, I'm going to give you 10 seconds to tell me how you liked your first live radio show.
Oh, this is the greatest. Let's take some more calls.
You were on the hot seat a little bit here. We do want to thank today's guest, Republican Party analyst Kevin Hermaning, also a Democratic Party analyst Christine Bremer, and Rob Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. We want to thank our executive producer, Rick Ryer, who is also today's on-air producer. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. It's been a lively discussion. Thanks so much for being part of it. Thanks for riding along with us today. Until next week, we are heading out of town.